welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. It's Bengals versus Chargers week here. I'm Kelsey Conway, joined by my co-host Charlie Goldsmith to break down the upcoming matchup that will take place at Paul Brown Stadium. It didn't end up getting flexed. There was a moment in time where we thought Joe Burrow versus Justin Herbert would be the headline for Sunday Night Football. But the NFL opted to keep the Bengals and Chargers at the 1 o'clock window. But that doesn't take away from the matchup and just how much is on the line here for both teams. Zach Taylor said yesterday, this is the biggest game of their season so far. And he wasn't speaking in coaching cliche because he was asked, well, why do you think this game? And he said, because of the magnitude of what it could do from a playoff picture standpoint, because both these teams are very much in the thick of the playoff race. Charlie, when you look at the overall storylines coming into this game, what's jumping off the screen for you?
Yeah, the Bengals still have to get to the playoffs, but if they reach it, this is the kind of game that will give me the most confidence that they could do something. The most important games, I think, to judge what you can do in January is how you fare against the top playmaking quarterbacks in the NFL. The Bengals had some very good results and some solid to mediocre results against Aaron Rodgers and much better against Lamar Jackson this season. But Justin Herbert, because of the kind of plays and explosive plays he can make with his arm strength outside the pocket, this is the type of quarterback that will let you know if the Bengals defense can level up to the level of the type of elite quarterback they'll face in January.
So let's start with the Bengals defense versus the Chargers offense, because that's pretty much where all of the main storylines are coming in. The Chargers are led by second-year quarterback Justin Herbert, who was taken a few spots after Joe Burrow in the same draft class. There's a lot of talk about Joe Burrow versus Justin Herbert and the rivalry that's to come for years, hopefully, in the NFL, because both these guys are playing at top of their games right now. Justin Herbert ranks number 4 in the NFL in passing yards. He's lighting it up. There's no question about his physical skill set, but he sure lived up to all of the praise coming out of Oregon. From an accuracy standpoint, you give the nod to Joe Burrow. He's been a little bit more accurate than Herbert. Right now, Joe Burrow's completed 235 of his passes. What stands out to you most about Justin Herbert, Charlie, and what do you think the recipe for success for the Bengals defense is against a player like Herbert?
Yeah, Jesse Bates had a really interesting topic today. Yesterday, he spoke about how disguises are something that Herbert's still adjusting to. I think that that's probably one of Burrow's best advantages over Herbert, is to steal words Burrow uses, the way he's able to really capture pre-snap reads and post-snap verification, how Burrow recognizes before the snap and adjusts his play call accordingly. And then once the snap happens, how he checks in on any late movement the defense might have done to disguise what they were doing. Like turn on the Ravens tape in particular with Herbert. You saw that's something he struggled with. Moments where has dealt with turnovers or inconsistency, that disguise has been a common trend as well. It's something the Bengals have a history of doing. Like look at what they did against the Ravens in particular. They've done a lot of the concepts that have frustrated Herbert more often than not. Herbert's not quite there at Burrow's level at that area yet. Herbert has his own strength. The Bengals will have to deal with those. But that's schematically what I have my eye on with the Bengals defense.
Well, what I have my eye on is the stat that jumped out to me. Justin Herbert has only been sacked 21 times. To put into perspective that number, Burrow's been sacked 30 times, and Joe Burrow has been sacked the third most of any quarterback in the NFL. So the Chargers are doing a phenomenal job protecting Herbert, and I know a lot of that comes with his ability to kind of wiggle out of the pocket and make plays, but right now we've seen when Cincinnati's defensive line dominates up front in terms of can really impact and affect the opponent's quarterback, they typically win. When they haven't been able to do that like they didn't against the Browns and the Jets, they've struggled defensively. And so I'm very curious to see how that, what plan Lou Anarumo has to affect Justin Herbert, knowing the Chargers offensive line has been very good.
Yeah, so it's funny, actually. I was planning on spending more time focusing on this week. So the Bengals and the Chargers had opposite off seasons. The Bengals in the draft got a number one wide receiver in Ja'Marr Chase. And while they got Riley Reiff, they didn't spend top of the market in free agency and make that their number one priority. That's exactly what the Chargers did. They got the guy who's playing like the best rookie offensive lineman in football, left tackle Rashawn Slater. They got the highest paid center in free agency. They made huge additions at right guard and got some consistency at right tackle as well. The Chargers went in on the all offensive line approach. The problem is the Chargers have had some injuries. They've overcome those injuries a lot on the line, but it's not the same five across investment that they literally had at one point in the offseason. So while it's not at a level of, say, the Browns offensive line right now, it had the potential to be because of how much they've invested in it. So in a lot of ways, you can still kind of peg this matchup as a strong offensive line that's been invested in a ton, but at the expense of the multiple wide receivers. The Chargers have two pass catchers and a tight end and a running back. They don't have the same plethora, the same spread that the Bengals have. So that's kind of the schematic difference between the offenses.
Well, let's talk about some of the matchups in particular. I just talked about the Bengals defensive line, but I think this game, more so than any other game, is going to be decided by the Bengals secondary because of the talent the Chargers have at wide receiver, starting with Keenan Allen, who you want to know how big of a part Keenan Allen is to the Chargers offense and Justin Herbert. He ranks number three in the NFL in catches, only behind Cooper Kupp and Tyreek Hill. In terms of Justin Herbert is getting him the ball, he has 81 catches for 895 yards. The yards don't necessarily jump off the tape. There's a number of wide receivers that have more receiving yards than him, but the catches and the targets is what stands out to me. They move him around the field. They find ways to get his catches in there. Zach Taylor said he actually shows tape of Keenan Allen's routes to players on his teams at various points in the season because he's such a good player. We haven't really seen, because the Steelers, they don't really have a dominant number one receiver. The Ravens don't really have a dominant number one receiver that's capable to the level of these guys. I want to preface this by saying that I obviously know the Steelers and Ravens have their number one guys, but I'm talking about top five receivers. We haven't seen the Bengals secondary be tested by players as good as the wide receiver duo the Chargers have. We'll learn a lot about Cheeto and Eli Apple, who's ascended, but are you worried at all about that matchup in terms of you think that they could potentially expose some things in the Cincinnati secondary we haven't seen?
So the Packers game that the Bengals played in October is a good benchmark for this.
Devontae Adams is pretty good in that game.
But here's the thing. Chidobe Awuzie was great against Devontae Adams in game. That's the thing. I believe like 60 to 75% of the yards Chidobe Awuzie got were when, for some reason, the Bengals called some sort of action that got, or the Packers probably called some sort of action that got Adams over away from Awuzie. Honestly, I think that Packers game was the best game Awuzie has played this season. We know that, and it's funny too, since then, Awuzie has been more aggressive about traveling and sticking with receivers. You saw that most prominently against the last week against the Steelers, where just every play Awuzie was in press coverage against Deontay Johnson. It felt like, feels like since that Packers game where Awuzie had great moments, they've been more aggressive about using Awuzie as much as they can as that number one guy. And, you know, cornerback, you can argue, is the most valuable position on a defense, a number one cornerback specifically. And because of what Keenan Allen brings to the table, as you mentioned, it's all on Chidobe Awuzie's plate right now.
Mm-hmm. And the Chargers use Jared Cook a lot at tight end. I've seen him play a lot from his time in New Orleans, so I know what he's capable of doing. And obviously there's that tie, right? The Chargers offensive coordinator came over from New Orleans, so they're used to the system of getting the ball out quick, finding ways to get their tight ends involved. It's not a huge explosive play offense. So we'll see. It's a great test. You want to know just how good Cincinnati's defense is. You will know following Sunday's game. So let's switch to the other side of the ball for the Bengals offense versus this Chargers defense. And you know you have to factor in Brandon Staley's only in his first year as head coach. But he earned his name from what he did with the Rams defense last year, which it's a lot different when you're coaching Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, of course. But the Chargers are an interesting team to me because they started out so hot and you thought, wow, with some of their playmakers, Derwin James, Joey Bosa, some of those guys, Kenneth Murray, who I loved coming out of Oklahoma, he's a great draft prospect. They are kind of figuring themselves out on who they want to be. They're not great against the run, so I think this is going to be a huge advantage for the Bengals. But when you look at which – how do you think the Cincinnati Bengals can go about exposing the weaknesses of the Chargers' defense?
Yeah, I mean, it's as easy as it gets. The Chargers are really, really struggling stopping the run. Like Christian Covington, who, you know, Bengals fans remember, started a ton of games for the Bengals last season. He was a guy they traded for in the beginning of September, ended up starting a ton of games, and he was a weakness of the Bengals' defense. That's someone who's now playing a lot of snaps in Los Angeles. And on top of that, just looking at the Chargers' depth chart, aside from Bosa, there aren't the high-impact playmakers next to the number one guy, like the Bengals, for example, saw against Pittsburgh or against the Raiders. So I was encouraged with what the Bengals showed against Watt last week. They gave him multiple looks, chips, pulling Quentin Spain, max protection units, running backs chipping, and then running out on a route. So I'm more confident than I was last week in the Bengals' ability to contain Bosa. And then on top of that, the Bengals will have the advantage of the other spots because of how inexperienced and, frankly, unimpressive the rest of the Chargers' defensive line has been.
Well, I think this is going to be a huge game, and I know we say it every week, but I'm very high on Brandon Staley as a defensive mind. I think he's a really good coach who puts his players in positions to make plays. This is a game where Joe Burrow is going to have to take care of the ball really well because Brandon Staley, it would not shock me if he gives Burrow some looks he's never seen before. And the Bengals didn't play the Rams last year, and they haven't played the Broncos yet, so they haven't quite seen that Fangio system this year. In order to be able to make adjustments. But I look at players like Derwin James, Nasir Adderley, the safety that came out of Delaware. They're ball hawks. And if Joe Burrow bites on something and is able to give the ball back to Justin Herbert in this offense, I think this is a game where Joe Burrow has to be exceptionally good at taking care of the ball because Brandon Staley is going to give him some looks that he has not seen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. And Derwin James specifically, I agree with what you said about James and the Chargers back seven. As turnover creators in particular, that's been a theme of Burrow's 2021 season. The jury still is not out on the overall impact of Burrow's turnovers because of how many of them have come on fluke plays. But in a game that I expect to be high scoring, they'll obviously carry extra weight. And it was really interesting hearing Jesse Bates speak extremely highly of Derwin James. Someone he really, really appreciates at the same position because of those skills you mentioned.
The Chargers have forced 12 turnovers, 7 interceptions, and 5 fumbles. So just speaking to what we were just talking about, but I think that's going to play a huge factor in the game. And also, Charlie, it's supposed to rain on Sunday. So will that play a role into Zach Taylor's play calling? If it's, we don't know the severity of how much it's supposed to rain, but if it is raining, does it become a more let's ground and pound and run this thing through Joe Mixon, which at this point, why would it not, based off the way he's been playing? So let's talk about Joe Mixon a little bit. What's your biggest takeaway of why Joe Mixon has been able to be as productive as he has over the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, well, you know, Joe Mixon is rightfully getting the credit. He's playing the best football of his career. But just right now, I've been so impressed by the guys around him. Like Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd all had a pancake block against the Steelers last week. The Bengals are using their tight ends differently, using more fullback concepts, using more two tight end sets, where Mixon is aiming for the outside tight end before he makes his cut one way or the other. The tight ends are doing an incredible job in some ways kind of setting the edge on the runs. It's not a line I've used in run protection as much, but in a lot of ways the tight ends are setting the end on the runs, all the way down to Stanley Morgan and the other receivers down on the depth chart. The blocking productivity the Bengals are getting, even outside the offensive line, that's how you get 15, 20, and 25-yard runs. And I've been as impressed with the Bengals, you know, alternate blockers almost, their skill position player blockers. I've been more impressed with that in terms of effort than I've been any other aspect of the Bengals this season.
Well, and I spoke with Frank Pollock, the Bengals offensive line coach, the other day. I have a story coming out on Cincinnati.com soon. Be sure to check that out for some more details on this. But I think what stood out to me most when I talked about how has this run game been resurgent like it has, and he said that when Zach Taylor brought him back for the interview process, Charlie, there were current Bengals on the team that tried to go in and like go in the room when Zach Taylor was interviewing Frank Pollock. And he said that spoke a lot to him about just the kind of impact he's been able to have on some of these guys, that the players wanted to go in and vouch for him. And I thought, wow, well, that tells you that they really like this guy and he's really hard on them. But he also said when he sat down with Zach in the offseason and they went all the way back to when they first hired him, and they talked about what they were really trying to accomplish in the run game. He said Zach Taylor had absolutely no ego. He didn't come in and say, I want to do it this way. He was open to literally revamping the whole thing with Brian Callahan and Frank Pollock. And I think that's when you can see big time success from a head coach is when they don't have an ego and they let someone like Frank Pollock, who's had a ton of success with Mixon and a ton of success in the NFL as an offensive line coach, really be able to hone in and shape the run game in the way he has. Because if that's his specialty, the fact that Zach Taylor, rather than saying, I'm the head coach, this is my offense, we need to do it this way, he said, show me what you think we can do better. And the Bengals are seeing that work out for them.
So here are two things I like about Frank Pollock's run game and why it's working. First, last year the Bengals were an inside run team. A lot of in between the tackle stuff is what Jim Turner preferred. This season, I mean, you couldn't count on two hands the styles of runs the Bengals are doing. Tosses, counters, pitches, misdirections, stretches, on and on and on. And that's keeping defenses off balance so much more than they did last season. And then on top of that, the wide zone scheme that Pollock runs, like so much fits Mixon's game, kind of because how it works is you aim outside and then the running back, his responsibility basically is he's in charge of one linebacker making them miss. It comes down to a cut to make that happen. And I think Joe Mixon's cutting ability is his best skill. His ability specifically, as you'll see, to cut inside and keep linebackers off balance that way is something he didn't get a chance to do in Jim Turner's run scheme last season. It's something that he gets to do 30 times a game sometimes, like he's doing right now. And it's been a perfect fit for Mixon.
And it's time for everyone to stop saying Joe Mixon is underrated, because I was listening to Brandon Staley's press conference this week. Joe Mixon is not underrated by any NFL coach in this league, and he's certainly not underrated to his teammates. I think that is because of just receivers get so much star power. Joe Mixon is playing as good as any running back. That includes Jonathan Taylor. Derrick Henry's out, but he ranks right behind them in statistical categories, and everybody wants to talk about the Cleveland Browns and just how good Nick Chubb is. Joe Mixon ranks ahead of him in rushing yards. So just trying to put into perspective just how good Joe Mixon has been this year.
And here's the thing about Mixon, too. Like, you know, for the first 9 weeks of the season, the run game wasn't the number one priority of the Bengals offense. Like, it's been the last 2 weeks. And there's a X percent chance that for the last month of the season, they go back to becoming a team that's passing a lot more than they're running. But here's the thing. The Bengals won two games this season because of Mixon and a power run scheme. Even if they don't do it again, that's still something that Mixon's high, incredible upside brought to the table with them. And on top of that, it's something now they've put on tape. So again, even if, you know, I expect them to use a lot more power run concepts the rest of the season, but even if they somewhat skew away from that, depending on different matchups down the stretch, that's still an opposing team's mind. There's still an impact there that you see with how teams load the box on a per snap basis. And again, even if Mixon's not getting 30 carries a game the rest of the season, what he did the last two games will leave a mark on the Bengals offense and the defenses they face going forward.
So before we head out, Charlie, let me ask you this. Is this a must-win game for the Cincinnati Bengals?
I mean, I would have said last week had a lot more on the line than this week. I'm picking the Chargers to win this game. I think that Herbert's explosive plays going to wide receivers and tight ends in particular, the opportunity specifically for a Williams or a Cook or an Eckler to make an explosive play down the field will be a determining factor. And on top of that, like I'm a believer in the Bengals power run game, but I think it's almost impossible for three consecutive games to run the ball 30 times as efficiently as the Bengals have in their previous two. Like, it's like asking a pitcher to pitch seven shutout innings, three straight games. It's not going to happen. I think the Bengals run game, just because of the math, won't be as explosive as it was previously. So for that reason, I'll pick the Chargers to win by three, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the Chargers are a great team, and the Bengals have put themselves in position where, you know, they have some breathing room. All they need to do is go 500 the rest of the way, basically, and they're in good shape.
Oh, that's interesting. You think that all they need to go is 500.
That's 3-3. That's 10 wins.
I still think that if you lose this game, you can only lose. I just think the number of losses is the key. I don't think you get in with more than six losses. So I think this game is a huge game. I do think it's a must-win for the Bengals in terms of then you really put yourself in a situation where you have some breathing room, because I don't think the Bengals will beat the Chiefs here in a couple weeks. The 49ers, that game next week, that might be a tough one, even though it doesn't really matter as much because it's against an NFC team. But I think if you win this game, you can pretty much assume the Bengals will get themselves in the playoffs. So from that standpoint, I think it's a must-win game. I'm with you. I'm picking the Chargers in this game just because I don't know enough about how good Cincinnati's cornerbacks are, and I just don't know if they're going to be able to shut down Mike Williams and Keenan Allen with, just like you said, Eckler and Jared Cook doing things over the middle. So tons of great matchups. It should be a fun one. Are you predicting a shootout?
Yeah, so am I. I'll go like 35-31, something weird like that. There hasn't been that kind of game in a while, and it feels like since that was the game we were expecting the Bengals to play all season, there haven't been enough shootouts. That's my take.
Yeah. We deserve a shootout. All right, well, that's it for Charlie and I. Now we're going to bring in Jason Hoffman to talk a little bit about the rest of this week's slate of games. Well, here's Jason Hoffman back to break down this week's upcoming slate of NFL games, talk a little bit about overs, unders, games he likes, games I like, home dogs. What do you got for us this week, Jason?
Well, you did pretty well last week, and I didn't do so shabby myself, so... That was a win again for us and our audience. Uh-huh. You got the home dog right again, so that's fine.
Yes.
I again failed, but no worries. I hit three of the others.
I'm getting the hang of this home dog thing.
You are. It's quite impressive for someone who's only in the 13th week of talking about betting ever. So,
exactly.
but yeah, this week's board is really awkward. There's some lines out there that don't seemingly make sense. There's some that seem too easy, in my opinion.
Okay.
But yeah, let's get started off with one that doesn't make sense.
Okay.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, and this started at 2.5, which didn't make any sense to me. Hosting the Ravens, opened at 2.5, has been bet to 4, which gets a little closer to what I would have thought. But this means that the bookmakers are saying either ignore last week or Pittsburgh's going to be tough at home or Baltimore's a fraud. I don't know which that is.
Well, to be honest, you and I could do a whole podcast on evaluating all three of the things that you just said. Lamar Jackson throwing 4 interceptions and the Ravens still finding a way to win against the Browns. I have absolutely no idea how that happens. And then the Steelers, I mean, I feel like every week it's like they're so bad, but then you look at like how they beat the Bills and some of the games they've won. So I think you can make an argument for all of those things you just said.
Well, I like, so this line opened at 2.5. It's moved to 4. I'm going to go ahead and preempt. I'll add another one later, but I'm going to go ahead and preempt and say, you know what? Let's get stupid. Let's take Pittsburgh outright to win.
Wow.
If you're not going to get stupid with me, take the 4 points. It might move to 5, 5.5 by game time, so you can get some more leverage there. But, yeah, this is a +170 on the board right now at Tipico. And call me crazy, call me whatever, but maybe this is a game where Pittsburgh shows up and does the opposite of what they did last week in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. What else? What other games stand out to you?
tonight's game, New Orleans and Dallas.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you saw or not from TMZ, reputable news source. But apparently, during a DUI arrest, a Cowboys running back said that he had just come from partying with Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott.
Yikes.
And this was yesterday morning, so Tuesday night. And they're playing a Thursday night game. So I, you know what? I'll go Saints plus five.
Wow.
Just on the thought, or sorry, they're at New Orleans. Just on the thought that a day before traveling, two of the star players for the Dallas Cowboys were out partying with a third string running back.
Wow. Yikes. Don't have a whole lot to say on that. I think this is a must-win game for the Cowboys, and the Saints have literally nobody healthy starting on the offensive line. Plus, I believe Taysom Hill is going to play tonight. I did hear that he has a foot injury, so he's banged up. But I just think the Saints are a mess, not because Sean Payton's not a fantastic coach. They just don't have a quarterback right now, and their offensive line's super banged up. And this is a must-win game for the Cowboys, because if they lose this game – I think that they're just going to unravel as a team. And hearing that, that is not good when your two starting quarterbacks, your two of your stars on offense are doing that. So I disagree. I think it's a must-win game and the Cowboys win. But interesting to hear your thoughts on that.
Can I have one chance to change your mind? Put the car salesman hat on here real quick.
Sure.
In a must-win game, the Dallas Cowboys are riding into battle in New Orleans on a night game, primetime game, with Ben McAdoo leading their team.
Wow.
Because Mike McCarthy's out with COVID.
I'm a big believer in Dan Quinn. So, you know,
okay.
Have to say that.
So Ben McAdoo can't change your mind on this?
No.
Okay. All right. We'll agree to disagree then.
Okay.
For all the factors that are not football, I'll take the Saints. Another game that I like involves the Detroit Lions and the Minnesota Vikings. Detroit getting 7 at home. At 7 at home. Minnesota coming off the win against Green Bay. Laying 7. What do you think, out of curiosity, because we've been on opposite sides so far?
How did Detroit get – you said they got 7?
They're getting 7 hosting the Vikings.
How is what I'd
Dalvin
like
Cook
to know.
Being out for 2 weeks with a separated shoulder.
Right, but the Vikings
just... That's literally the only thing I can think of.
The
it
Vikings
should be a,
just
It should
beat,
be a 12 or 13 point line.
Yeah, in my opinion, the Packers are the team to beat in the NFL right now. And the team that beat them is somehow only favored to win by...
A touchdown.
A touchdown over, in my opinion, the Lions are the worst team in the NFL. So,
yeah, they've kind of separated themselves.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, we're in agreement then, because I was going to say lay the points with the Vikings. Even bet it a little bit more and maybe a 3-point tease, take it to 10.
Right.
And you got the chance to push. So, yeah, that was one of the lines that when I looked at it, I said, are you kidding me? Only a touchdown?
Right.
So, yeah, in agreement.
Well, that's kind of how I felt about looking at the entire slate of games this week. A very weird week. Like, there's not one game where I'm like, yep, that's going to happen. Like, I can definitely bet all my money on that one. I'm definitely confident in that one. A game that I wanted to ask you about. This is kind of my question mark game that I keep coming back to because I have no idea who's going to win this game. I think I do. The Giants playing at the Dolphins. The Dolphins are favored 4. I think it was 4 when I last looked at it. That's what my
yeah,
notes
it's still
say.
4.
But like, who thought the Giants were going to beat the Eagles last week? So I'm very I'm ... on this game.
Well, I had the Giants to cover last week. Did not think they'd win outright, but thought they'd keep it close enough to cover the spread. I think this week's a little different. I think that Miami defense clamps down on them.
You were a hater on the Miami Dolphins at the beginning of the year. I just would like to bring that up.
I still am. I still am because I don't think Tua Tagovailoa is an NFL quarterback. And in order to win in a league, you have to have a quarterback.
He's playing pretty well right now.
But I think the Giants are good enough on defense and Miami's still inept enough on offense against decent teams, well, even mediocre teams, that I think they keep it close enough within a field goal. I think they cover the four.
Yeah, even though Daniel Jones, I don't think, is playing. So, all right. Well, I'll go to my home dog.
Okay.
So, had a couple options here. I am going to go with the Buffalo Bills in a big one on Monday night.
I like it.
To win. Obviously, they're favored. They're at home. But I think they more than cover the spread. I think this is a game where everybody's super – and I know you're big on Bill Belichick. But I think the Bills maybe win this game by more than a touchdown.
Okay.
So that's my home dog. I'm all in on the Bills this week, even though I was not all in on them in New Orleans last week. But that's my home dog.
Okay. I already got kind of crazy with the Steelers. I'm going to get even crazier, and not crazier point spread wise, but crazier in where the team is at right now.
Wait,
are you ready for this one?
Give me a hint so I can try and guess.
Season's over, and I still think they're going to win this week against a divisional foe.
Season is over. Divisional foe. Hang on. Don't tell me that you are picking the Texans to beat the Colts.
Nope. Not that bad. I'm not that desperate.
Okay. Then I got nothing.
The Seattle Sea Chickens.
Yes. Over the 49ers.
For all intents and purposes, their season's over, but they're getting 2.5 points at home. It's a +145 on the money line. AD, Adrian Peterson all day. Is now in the fold in Seattle on the practice squad, albeit, but he's in the fold in Seattle. And this is another one of those games where I think something stupid happens.
Right.
And the Seahawks beat the 49ers. And everyone just goes scratching their head like, how is that possible?
I could definitely see it because it just kind of seems like when all else, like when everybody's down on the Seahawks, they somehow find a way to win. Plus, they're getting some nasty press headed their way this week in terms of are the Seahawks done? So I could see them finding a way to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, they're not mathematically done, but the NFC is nowhere near as wide open as the AFC is, right. If that makes sense.
Well, before we head out, give me your thoughts on the Bengals-Chargers game.
All right, I love this game because I think everyone who bets on it is going to push it because it's Bengals -3 against the Chargers. And I'm going to do it again because this is what I told you I was going to do multiple times a couple weeks ago. I'm going to call for another shootout.
Yep.
Yep.
I agree.
So even though all signs point to the Chargers are terrible at stopping the run.
Yes.
The Bengals could easily run it down their throats. I don't know. 3+ weeks of giving Joe Mixon 30+ touches seems like a bit much to me.
Agreed. I think that Charlie and I both just talked about we think it's a shootout.
Correct. And I'm going to go a two-team parlay on this one. Bengals -3, cover the 3. They could win by a touchdown. They could win by 4. I think they definitely win. And 50.5 over. I think both teams score at least 25 points. I think the Bengals definitely score at least 28. I think the Chargers can get 24 or so. I'm going to say Bengals -3 and the over the total of 50.5. What say you?
I don't know. I'm picking the Chargers this week. I just think the last time we saw the Bengals have a super emotional win, they were in Baltimore. What'd they do? They followed it up with like their worst performance of the year in New York. I agree with you. I think it's going to be a shootout. So I think that's a, what'd you say, 51 points?
50.5. So yeah, 51 for all intents and purposes.
I would agree with that, but I think it's going to go on the other end. But I do think it's a close game. I think the Chargers maybe like a 31 21 type of game.
Okay.
So I don't know. I just, for whatever reason, and I don't think this game is like doom's falling if the Bengals lose. But I just think, like you said, 2 weeks in a row, Brandon Staley is one of the best defensive minds. I think the Chargers are going to have a better game plan. I don't know if they'll execute it because, like you said, they've not been good against the run. But I don't know if we'll see. But, hey, look, if the Bengals win this game, I'm going to just tip my cap to them because last week I picked the Steelers to win, and this week I'm picking the Chargers. And if they win, I think I'll finally say, okay, maybe I'll actually pick the Bengals next week.
Yeah, well, I thought the Steelers would cover the points last week, and they didn't cover the points in any of the quarters. So that was certainly a surprise on my end.
Yep. Well, before we get out of here today, Jason, I know you've got some things that you have to say.
Just want to remind everybody that all lines here are provided by Tipico Sportsbook. Tipico is a partner of Gannett Company, Inc., which is our corporate ownership. And Gannett makes money off of that partnership. So please be advised that everyone out there listening, that all of the lines and odds and everything else that's discussed here is just for fun. It's not for actual betting purposes. And please feel free to take shots at us on social media if we're wrong. And if you or anybody you know has a problem with gambling, please contact 1-800-GAMBLER.